Thank you, Paul. 34 years ago, next month, Paul Purifoy introduced me to my wife. Now, that's a friend, I'll guarantee you. He gave me the best one. Well, he would disagree with that. But I sure think that. Have you ever been in deep water? Now, I'm not talking about a swimming pool. I'm talking about in life. Maybe it's, as Harry mentioned, with your health. Maybe you've gone to a doctor and the whole world changes in one doctor's visit. Or maybe it's your wife's health or your child's or your parents'. Maybe it's in your marriage. Maybe you went home one night and your wife explained that things were not at all like you thought they were. Maybe you did that. Maybe it's with your kids. I was a perfect father till my oldest son turned 17. And my next son's here. Where's Blair? Where are you, Blair? Stand up, Blair. There is hope after 17, folks. Blair's not my oldest. He's my second one. But, you know, as a parent, there's no greater joy than to see your children walk with the Lord. And I tell you, there's probably no greater agony than when they don't. Maybe it's in your job or the job you used to have. Maybe it's in your finances. Maybe it's self-imposed. Maybe it's sin in your own life, or maybe it's pride. Maybe it's that you're just overcommitted. Maybe it's an attack from either Satan or an attack from another person, but you're in deep water. Well, I want to talk about that tonight. You know, I think that the talks in this type of setting that are best are the ones that are autobiographical. So I was going to talk on something else, and as I just kind of thought about this and slept on it, I'm running for United States Senate. It was all I could do to keep the bumper stickers out of here. But I'll tell you what, you know, if as Paul said, that God's power is made perfect in weakness, just do something like that, and you'll find out where your limits are. And I'm speaking particularly of physically. It just wears you out. And so I'm speaking autobiographically tonight about being in deep water. But I bet you that I'm not the only one in this room that feels he's like, you know, maybe you're 6 foot tall and 12 foot of water. And it keeps rushing. My former pastor, Tom Eliff, every winter goes to Hawaii, gets away for a couple of weeks. And a couple of weeks ago, he was in Hawaii on the North Shore, and a big wave came crashing in. Tom's probably 60 years old, and he planted his foot wrong, and it broke his tibia right below the kneecap, a wave. So sometimes it's just deep water. Sometimes it's rushing water, and it's just rushing in on you like it did on Tom. But whatever it is, you know you're in well over your head, and you're beyond your capacity to handle it. You're in deep water. Isaiah 43:2 says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame will not consume you." And in that verse, I think there are four very special promises of God when we're in deep water. The first, that first phrase, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you." The presence of God. You know, I think the worst thing we can be in life, I don't care if you're talking about just your own walk with God, I don't care if you're talking about in your business, in struggling with sin in your life, in pursuing your career, in struggling in a family relationship, I think the worst thing you can be is alone. You feel alone tonight? Anyone feel alone tonight? You may be in a room of 500 guys here, but in your heart, you feel alone. Maybe no one else knows how you're hurting. Maybe no one else even knows what you're struggling with. You're alone. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. I think another dimension of that is really depression. You know, when you pass through the waters, you're in deep water and you don't see how you're going to make it. You're depressed. You're melancholy. You're dejected. You're down in your spirit. And if that's where you are, alone, dejected, melancholy, depressed, and I guarantee you, some of you feel that way tonight. In fact, some of you feel that way and you don't think you'll ever feel better. You don't think it'll ever change. This verse is for you. Because it says, when you pass through the waters, what? I will be with you. If no one else is with you, God will be. Genesis 28:15 in the Living says, this is Jacob, he's speaking to. God says, what's more, I am with you and I will protect you wherever you go and will bring you back safely to this land. I will be with you constantly until I've finished giving you all I'm promising. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. Now, how's God with us? Now, sometimes he's with us through his word. And so we can read a verse and it just jumps out at us. And maybe we see that verse differently than anyone else sees it, or differently than we've ever seen it before, but it jumps out, and that's God with us. Sometimes it's him speaking to us, that still small voice. I don't know about you, but God speaks to me a lot at night. He really does. In fact, many of the most important things that have ever happened in my life have been at night. And I mean, I'm not even awake, I don't know. I mean, even this talk. A few years ago, I was going to go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and do a prayer breakfast, and I was struggling with what do I speak on, and I had all kinds of talks I was thinking about. And one night, I thought, you know what? I mean, in the middle of the night, and the thought came to me, you know what? You're mayor of Oklahoma City. Why don't you talk about the bombing? I mean, there's not many guys in the country who talk about that like I could. And, you know, I didn't know it, John, but the next morning I got up and looked, okay, what am I doing today? And I was supposed to do, early the next morning, a radio interview with a radio station in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and they wanted to know what I was talking about. And I changed it in the middle of the night. But God will speak to you that way. God speaks to you through a friend, through your mate, through music, through teaching. He's with you. But when you pass through the waters, if the problem there is, let's call it depression, the answer, I think, is fellowship. Fellowship with God and fellowship with fellow Christians. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if one falls, the other will lift him up. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. We have a little grandson. We have three grandchildren. And we have a little grandson named Ford. And Ford is 2 years old. And when Ford was about a year old, maybe 9 months old, he just wasn't developing normally. And we didn't know what the deal was. And so we tested a lot of things. And finally they found out that Ford was profoundly deaf. He was born hearing. We don't know what went wrong. To this day, we don't know what happened. He was born hearing, passed the test, and even responded to sounds. But then we realized that Ford was deaf, profoundly deaf. And so, thank God, in Oklahoma City, and I don't know if, is Mike McGee here tonight? Any of the guys from that practice here tonight? But thank God, in Oklahoma City, Dr. Jack Huff and Dr. Mike McGee, Stan Baker, some of those other fellows, have developed amazing technology in hearing. And so our little grandson, when he was about a year and a half old, was able to get what they call a cochlear implant. And the only way I know to describe it, it's a digital electronic ear that they put in the inner ear. It has a hearing device outside, and it connects through the skin. They drill into the skull, and it works. And they can hear. In fact, in Oklahoma City, you'll see an ad of a kid that's about 12 years old playing an electric bass, and he is profoundly deaf in both ears, and he has cochlear implants. So we're talking about when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And you know, when you're struggling like that, you really feel alone. Well, Billy Graham came to Oklahoma City last summer, and I was chairman of the executive committee that brought him to town. I was mayor, and it was a busy week, and the crusade started on Thursday night, but on Wednesday morning, the day before the mission started, Ford was going in for surgery. And so your little one-and-a-half-year-old grandson is, and my son's one-and-a-half-year-old son is going in for, you know, to have his skull drilled on, if I can put it that way. And so my son Grant called me. It's Tuesday night, and you know how you're busy, you know, and you're rushing around, and cell phones are wonderful. They've just made our lives worse. And so I'm driving home and Tuesday night, and Grant calls me. And you know how it is when your friend or your son or your spouse, they've got a little tinge of desperation in their voice. And he says, "Hey, Dad, I was wondering, do you think we can see Billy Graham this week?" And I said, "I don't think so. I really don't think so. They really protect his schedule." I said, "I'll try, but I don't think so." And so then he calls back a couple of minutes later, a little more desperation in his voice, and he said, "Daddy," he said, "do you think you could get Billy Graham to pray for Ford? Because the surgery is tomorrow morning." And if you were there at that crusade on Thursday night, Billy Graham said, "I woke up early yesterday morning to pray for someone who was having surgery." As Ford. But anyway, so I said, you know, I think I can get to him. I knew how to get, you know, he does not register at the Holiday Inn under Dr. William Graham. He doesn't do that. But I was able to get to him. I called a fellow that travels with him, and David. And he said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, give me the phone number and give me the time and give me the boy's name and give me the mother's name and the dad's name." So I called Grant. I said, "What are y'all doing tonight?" And he said, "Well, we're going to go out to dinner." I said, "Don't do that. Stay home." And I told him why. And so on that Tuesday evening, as it happened, Grant was filming little Ford playing around, you know, on the floor. And the phone rings, and the voice on the other end in that North Carolina accent says, "Jennifer?" And she goes, "Yes." He goes, "This is Billy Graham." And they got it on tape because they put it on speakerphone. We heard both ends of it. It's wonderful. Sometimes when you're alone, God speaks through Billy Graham, not often. But many times it's that Christian brother. Just a word of encouragement, just a phone call, just a letter, just a card, just a pat on the arm so that we're not alone. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. The presence of God. The next one, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. This is the provision of God. Through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. About 34 years ago, Chip and I were at Glen Eyrie at a BSU retreat. Max Barnett's back here. Where are you, Max? You think Max looks old now? I thought he looked old 35 years ago. I'm glad you have your weight under control, Max. I was always worried about you. But we had a guy speak, and I don't know who the speaker was up there, But he quoted Philippians 4:19, and he said, "If you don't do anything else before you go to bed tonight, memorize this verse." And so I thought, boy, that's a good idea. And so that afternoon, I'd totally forgotten about it, and I was with Chip, and Chip goes, well, we better work on that verse. And I said, what verse? And that is the first verse I ever memorized of my own free will. I'd memorized a whole bunch out of punishment. You know, say a few things, you memorize verses on the tongue and things like that. But out of my own free will, that was the first verse in the modern era. And we worked on it together, Chip and I did. And my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. I love the song about the credit card. Just, that's a great song. I need to try that with some of those cards. But my God will supply every need of yours according to what? According to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. That great supply that John Crawford talked about, those semi-loads. Now I'll tell you guys this. I don't know how you feel tonight. This says, and through the rivers, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. Is life overwhelming you tonight? Yeah, the first part of that, when you pass through the waters, to me, that's kind of like being in over your head. You know, being 6 foot tall and 12 foot of water. But this, through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. I get the picture about, you know, Pharaoh's army. And the Israelites have just gone through the Red Sea on dry land, and Pharaoh's army thinks, hey, this is great, and they're in there, and then the water starts coming in on them. And none of them survived. But have you ever been in a situation in your life where you just felt it was coming on you in waves and it wouldn't quit? I think that's what it's talking about here. Through the rivers they shall not overwhelm you. And it says, my God will supply every need of yours according to his riches and glory in Christ Jesus. I tell you guys, I'm tired tonight. I hope I don't sound it, and I hope I don't look as tired as I feel. But I'm tired. Because they work me like a dog all week long. And I, thank goodness the Bible says work 6 days and rest on the seventh. By Sunday night, I'm in good shape. But boy, by Friday night and Saturday, I'm tired. And tomorrow, I'm doing four county conventions all around the state of Oklahoma. So I feel tired. I don't know how you feel. I bet some of you feel tired. I bet you've had a hard week. And some of you feel like it's coming on you in waves, and you don't think it'll quit. And through the rivers they shall not overwhelm you. If the first one, going through the deep water, is depression, this one is despair. And despair is different than depression. Depression's being down. Despair is being without hope. Despair is feeling powerless. Despair is giving up. Despair is feeling a sense of resignation. If depression is it's bad, despair is it's bad and it's never going to change. It's going to keep being bad. It's going to be bad forever. Now, thank goodness my misery is over November 2nd. Or it could just be starting. Well, if fellowship is the answer to depression, you're going to have to stay with me on this. If you're in despair and it's overwhelming you, the answer is pressurization. And what do I mean by that? You know, we live in an atmosphere, and you're under enormous pressure all the time, but you don't feel it because the pressure outside your body and the pressure inside your body is equalized. Now, is anyone here a diver? Anyone here a diver? You go down to 100 feet below, I don't do that, but you go down to 100 feet below, I don't know how much the pressure has increased, but it's enormous, right? In fact, that's how much? Three times? And that's why when you're coming up, you have to only come up so far each time or you'll get the bends because of what the nitrogen releasing within your body. And it's also, so we function fine at sea level or at normal, you know, at ground level. We don't do real well too far below normal or too far above normal. I'm a pilot, and so if you get in an airplane, you're fine up to about 10,000 feet. Then you get a little bit lightheaded, and above 12,000 feet, you can't. It's not legal to fly an airplane above 12,000 feet for longer than a half an hour without oxygen or pressurization because we don't do that well. Now, here's my point. I don't think spiritually, emotionally, we do very well when we're too far down or too far up. If you're in an airplane and you get up to, say, 15,000 feet for about an hour, you're going to get what? Hypoxia. You're not enough oxygen. And in fact, that's what happened in Payne Stewart's airplane. In Payne Stewart's airplane, apparently they had a leak in the pressurization system, and it didn't happen all at once. It happened gradually, and gradually everyone went to sleep. And you remember that? The plane was still flying along on autopilot. They put some military planes up there to look at it, and all the windows were frozen up, and it was just cruising along with no one alive. And our problem is that if we get too far down, we're under the burden of all this pressure, and we get in despair, and we give up. Or if we get, we're equally as inept at being too far up, if you know what I mean. In other words, if things are going too good for us, we kind of get hypoxia spiritually. And we think everything's wonderful, and, you know, we're going to sleep spiritually and emotionally, and we think everything's fine. So it's really dangerous for us if our feet are not on the ground spiritually. Does that make sense? Through the rivers they shall not overwhelm you. If the problem's despair, the answer is pressurization. God's built to handle pressure better than we are. And so, this is our spiritual pressure suit. Wiley Post, Oklahoma City is the only city in the country that has two airports named for guys who died in a plane crash. Will Rogers and Wiley Post. But Wiley Post developed the first pressure suit to where you could go up high into the atmosphere and still function because he was in a pressure suit. But this is the pressure suit for us spiritually. God's Word teaches us how to keep our feet on the ground even when we're doing well, and how to get the pressure off of us when it's overwhelming us. Isaiah 40, 29 and 31 says, He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might he increases strength. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. If you're feeling overwhelmed, wait for the Lord. You shall renew your strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The presence of God, the provision of God. And then third, it says, when you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. That's the protection of God. Hebrews 13, 5 and 6 says, For he has said, I will never fail you or forsake you. Hence we can confidently say, The Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? You shall walk through, when you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. Now, I think the picture here is a little different than the next phrase. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. I think this is an attack from an enemy. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. The Hebrew boys in the fiery furnace weren't burned, didn't even smell like smoke. That was an attack from an enemy. So this is an attack that's meant to harm you. And it says here, when you face an attack that's meant to harm you, it won't harm you. It won't even be burned. Maybe it's an attack by Satan. Maybe it's an attack by another person. If you want to get attacked by another person, run for office. If you want to get really something amusing sometime, go to a website called kirkisajerk.com. You'll find out what an awful guy I am. That is not my campaign website. Okay, so when we're attacked by somebody or by Satan, when life attacks us, how do we respond to that? If we don't watch it, we're going to respond to that attack with bitterness. We'll allow that external attack to work its way into our spirit, and we'll become bitter. There's a family that is a close friend of ours, and I'll tell you, they've had every problem known to man. The mother, the wife, was my wife's college roommate. They live in Seminole, Oklahoma. Her name is McMaines, Larry and Cynthia McMaines. And they had two girls, and then they had a boy who was born the same month Blair was born, Matthew. And Matthew was born without an immune system. He was a bubble boy, if you know what I mean. And they didn't discover it right at the first, and then he started getting sick, and they couldn't keep him from getting sick. About that time, they discovered she was pregnant with another boy. Both boys were born with what they call severe combined immune deficiency, SCIDs. And they had no immune system. The second boy did better because he was born into a sterile environment and never got some of the diseases that Matthew got. Matthew's now 21 years old. He did well enough in high school to win the state championship in doubles in tennis, even though he could hardly walk. It was amazing. This family has had more problems. The father, about 8 or 10 years ago, got a pituitary tumor at the base of his brain, and they treated that, and he seems to be doing well. The mother, last year, had breast cancer. And Matthew has fought all this problem with an immune system. And then he went to church camp one time and took a shower, and got warts on his feet, planter's warts. They took him to a doctor in Oklahoma City. The entire sole of both feet are covered with thousands of planter's warts. And I hear that one is very painful. It attacks the nervous system. And they took him to a doctor. It's a specialist in this. And the guy looked at him and was speechless. And he just started shaking his head. And he said, I've never seen anything like this. You know, the worst he'd ever seen was a patient with maybe 20. And Matthew has thousands. How do you respond to that? Then, when I ran for mayor, a fella ran against me, and he ran some attack ads. In fact, he ran one ad on the radio that said, hey, why don't you ask Humphreys about that junk that he took to New York when he was on the school board? I think he meant that I was not honorable. I think that's what he meant. And so we did something. My campaign guy said, you know, I've always wanted to do this. Someone did it to me once. I'd love to do it. He goes, I told him, I said, hey, I went to New York. It was school board business, but I didn't trust the financial people, so I paid my own way. He said, do you have a check for that? And I said, yeah. It was 7 years before. My secretary found the check, $1,100-some-odd. I'd written to the school district to pay my share of the expenses. We called a news conference out in front of my opponent's campaign headquarters. Everybody came. It was wonderful. We had a big check we gave to him. Now, this is what happened. If you'd have called us and asked, we would have told you. Well, I beat the guy bad. No, it was good. I went into the mayor's office after I got elected. And my first day there, my secretary says, and she'd been the mayor's secretary forever, and she goes, we have a number of appointments to make, and all of your surrogates, because you can't go to all the meetings, so you have surrogates on various boards and commissions. All of your surrogates, when the previous mayor left office, all those termed out, and so you need to appoint surrogates for all these boards. Okay, and she goes, now one of them is the fellow who ran against me, Guy Liebman is his name. And by the way, he and I are good friends now, but you'll hear that in a moment. He was Mayor Norick's surrogate on the Water Trust. The Water Trust is one of the most coveted appointments in Oklahoma City. I don't know why, but they run and operate, own and operate all the lakes, and it's just a big deal to people. He was Mayor Norick's surrogate on the Water Trust, and you need to appoint a new surrogate, and I'm sure you wouldn't want to appoint him. And I said, no, I wouldn't. It's funny, I dug out a Bible that I was using at that time to take notes on Sunday morning. And it was, I think it was April 19th, 1998. But it was 5 days after I was sworn in as mayor. The Sunday after I was sworn in, the pastor's sermon was out of the book of Genesis on Joseph and his brothers, and the title was How to Win Out Over the Wish to Get Even. In Genesis 50:20, Joseph said to his brothers, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. And the pastor made the point, when someone does you wrong, do good for them. Don't just ignore them. Don't just forgive them. Do something good for them. And he told the story about a man who was always getting criticized, and whenever this man heard that, he would, if it was a man, he'd send him a nice silk tie. If it was a woman, a nice silk scarf with a note and say, you know, I understand you may be upset with me, and if there's anything I need to do to get that straightened out, please let me know. I want to do that. Hope you enjoy this tie. Hope you enjoy this scarf. And they'd get the tie and think, well, that cheapskate, probably a cheap tie, and they'd turn it over. It's 100% silk. They couldn't bring themselves to throw it away, and so they'd hang it up in their closet, and invariably the day came months later when, you know, guys, how our wives dress us. We don't have enough sense to put blue and gray together, but and so the wife said, hey, put on this tie. It looks great with that outfit and suit, whatever, outfit. I have never watched that show, whatever it's called. Sound like some of you have, though. But anyway, and so the guy wears the tie, and he gets complimented on it, and then he thinks, you know what? That fellow sent me that tie. He's really a pretty nice guy. And so I, of course, you know, when the pastor said all this, I thought, oh. So the next day I go in, I call the secretary in, and I said, appoint Guy Liebman to the Water Trust. She said, what? And so I told her about the sermon and explained it. A couple days later, I'm walking into City Hall, and Guy Liebman has just parked in the parking lot, and we're walking in, and he catches up to me, and he says, hey, thanks for that appointment on the Water Trust. Now, you got to realize that I didn't know him before we ran against each other, and we had never spoken a comfortable word to each other. The only way we'd known each other was as opponents in a political race. In fact, our first meeting, he had said, well, my people are out picking up political signs. Mayor, do you want yours back? I said, the ones you picked up before the election or the ones you picked up after the election? A couple weeks later, he took me to, I said, hey, I knew you would enjoy that, and I knew it was important to you, and I think you'll do a great job. He took me to Rotary Club a couple weeks later, and John, I don't know if you've ever been to Rotary Club. In downtown Oklahoma City, the Rotary Club is the biggest deal in town. Maybe 400 people there, it's all the movers and shakers in town, and it was really funny. We walk into this big luncheon room, and they're all going to their tables, getting ready to sit down, and we just simply walk in together and start walking toward a table at the front of the room, and the whole room went stone dead silent because we were walking together. It sent reverberations through City Hall that this new mayor would appoint his political opponent to this important appointment. And I'll tell you what, I was mayor for 5.5 years, and during those 5.5 years, by the way, he's the vice mayor today, the acting mayor since I resigned. In those 5.5 years, he was my closest ally at City Hall. And I got all kinds of things done that I could not have gotten done without his help. So the answer for bitterness is forgiveness. Bless your enemies. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned. And then the last one is, the flame shall not consume you. The presence of God, the provision of God, the protection of God, and this last one is the purification of God. Now, you remember I said that last, you shall walk through fire and not be burned? That was an attack from the enemy, and so you walk through and you're not scorched, you don't smell like smoke, you're not burned. Now, I think this is different. By the way, since I'm a layman, I can think anything I want, right? I don't have a clue what it says in the Hebrew. Nor do you, most of you. But this doesn't say you won't be burned. It says it won't burn you up. the flame shall not consume you. This is the, to me, this is the burning bush, if I can say it that way. Remember the burning bush, the amazing thing about it? It was totally engulfed in flame, and yet was not consumed by the flame. But what happens to our lives when we are totally engulfed in flame, and I think that's the picture here, but we're not consumed? What's the end product? You tell me. Yeah, we're cleansed. We're purified. It burns off the stuff that's not profitable. Now, does that say it doesn't burn? No. Does that say it doesn't hurt? I don't think so. Does that say that it's a pleasant experience? I don't think so. But it won't consume you. 1 Peter 1, 6 and 7 says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been distressed by various trials." It's not fun, you're distressed by it. "That the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So the picture here is, you're going through fire, it's burning, it's distressing, it hurts, you wish you weren't there, but you're better off the way you come out. That's the picture. It's a refining fire from God. The last fire was an attack from who? From an enemy. Okay? This one is not an attack from an enemy. This is a refining fire that God allows to come into our lives to help us, to make us better. As it says I think it's Proverbs 25:4, to burn away the dross. To burn away the impurities in our lives. Do you have anything that needs to be burned away? Yeah, I think so. I think we all do. So we have a choice in that. We can run from it, or we can accept it, but there's a third choice. We can embrace it. And that's a difference. That's not the same as accepting it. We can embrace it. James 1, 2 through 4 in the Living says, when these various trials come into your life, don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. God, I so much want to be your man that I welcome this trial into my life. I welcome this fire. It hurts like the dickens. And I want it to be over with. Let's do it quick. 1 Corinthians 3:13 talks about how all of our works will be tested by fire, be revealed by fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. And the purified you is what remains after all your worldly works have been consumed in the fire. You know, I've been interested in watching this presidential campaign. Now, I'll tell you, there's an R after my name. But it's kind of interesting to watch the Democrats. I was praying for Howard Dean, and you would understand that. But these crazy campaigns that last about a year, you look at it and you think, what a crazy system. But it works. It really works. I mean, as much as I hate to admit it, John Kerry is a better candidate for the Democrats than Howard Dean. For the Democrats, thank goodness that Howard Dean had one rebel yell left in him, you know. Now, I hope it ends before they figure out that John Edwards is more dangerous for the Republicans than John Kerry is. But it has a way of testing the mettle of the candidates. It has a way of testing their strength. It has a way of testing their character. And it has a way of exposing any of the inadequacies or impurities. I just hope it exposes a few more of some of those guys' impurities. But that's what you feel like when you're in the middle of it, I just tell you that. You feel like that you're in a fire. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. Now, there's one word that's in that verse more than any other word. What is it? I see when twice. Come on, class, wake up. Huh? You through. Through. Through is what I want. It's the right answer, whether it's there more than anything else or not. Through. It's been a long day. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. You walk through fire, you shall not be burned. And the flame shall not consume. And that's the promise of God. We've heard about the presence of God, the provision of God, the protection of God, the purification of God. And this is the promise of God. You'll get through it. It didn't say, when you're in the water, I'll be with you. Did it? Could have said that, but it didn't. It said, when you pass through the waters, I'll be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. And walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. The promise of God is, I'll take you through it. I resigned as mayor 3 months ago, and I was at a banquet a couple of weeks ago, a luncheon, and the MC said, well, Kirk, do you miss being mayor? And he expected me to say, oh, no. And I said, yeah, I miss it a lot. And I really do. It was a great experience. Seriously, if you ever have a chance to run for a school board, do it. If you ever have a chance to be mayor of your city, do it. It's really great to be in the middle of everything that's happening where you live. And I miss that. But one of the experiences that was most memorable was an awful night, really, in 1999, about a year after I became mayor. We had a tornado go through Oklahoma City. And it was the highest wind ever measured on planet Earth. They had a brand new instrument that would measure up to 327 miles an hour, and it pegged it and broke it. That tornado was on the ground in Oklahoma, stayed on the ground for over 80 miles. It was on the ground in Oklahoma City, across the metro, for 18 miles. And you can look at an aerial photograph, and it's anywhere from it cleared a path anywhere from a quarter mile wide to a half mile wide, and in fact, cleared everything in that path and sucked the grass out of the ground. And I'm not joking. And so that hit, and I went down there that night, and it was really something. It totally destroyed 3,000 homes. It damaged 10,000 more homes and destroyed 30,000 cars. That's a bad night at the office. So I was down there that night, and you're walking through, just this debris is incredible. And, I mean, you hear gas, you know, going out into the atmosphere. So I got home late, like 12:30. And I had to be back down there about 6:30 in the morning. And so about 2:30 in the morning, a phone rang, and it was a lady, and she goes, I'm so-and-so. I'm a producer with the Today Show in New York. Would you want to come on with Katie Couric in the morning? And I said, sure. I mean, that doesn't happen every night at my house. I don't know about your house, but not my house. And so the next morning at 6:30, I was in a dark church parking lot in South Oklahoma City. No electricity, no lights. I was on a cell phone talking to Katie Couric. And so at the end of the interview, she says, and I've never seen this interview, but I've talked to people who've seen it. And at the end of the interview, she says, well, what would you say to people around the country? What can they do for the people in Oklahoma City? And I thought, boy, how do you answer that? And so first thing came to mind, I said, well, just ask them to pray for us. And I heard she got a shocked look on her face that a mayor of a city would say, pray for us. Well, the next day, all of the Satellite City moved into Oklahoma City. In fact, they'd just come from Columbine up in Denver. They'd been there. There's a, you know, a band of gypsies that travels around the country to wherever. And so they had descended on Oklahoma City, and they called it a Satellite City. And so I was on with Katie Couric the next morning, and it was a split screen. She was in New York, and I was in Oklahoma City. And so I was ready for her. We got to the end of the interview, and I knew she would ask this, and she said something like this. She goes, "You know, the people in Oklahoma have been through so much. You've had the bombing. You've had these economic booms and busts. And now you have this tornado. And yet you seem to keep going. How do you do that?" And I said, "Well, Katie, you know, we're told suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope." And people all over the world have seen the suffering of the people of Oklahoma City, and in the bombing they saw our character, but now they're seeing us look to the future with hope. Well, People Magazine was impressed with what I'd written. So I'm not joking, this is true. They flew a reporter, People Magazine flew a reporter from Houston to Oklahoma City, sat down for an interview, and they said, "You know, you were on Katie Couric, and you talked about suffering, character, and hope. Where did you get that?" And I said, they never printed this, believe me. And I said, "Well," I said, "that was in the book of Romans, in the 5th chapter of the book of Romans, verses 3 through 5. And she goes, "How do you know that?" And I said, "Well, I memorized it years ago." And Paul, why don't you start on up here? And so they never printed the article. But guys, when you pass through the waters, God will be with you. Through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. The presence of God will be with you, the provision of God to get you through, the protection of God to keep you from being burned, and the purification of God to make you what He wants you to be. And His promise to you is that you'll get through it.